This past week, the long-anticipated announcement finally arrived as it was announced that SpaceX would launch their public offering. It's going to be on June 12th, by the way. Now, while space exploration has always fascinated people, as the Artemis Moon mission has reminded us, my first guest today with his soon-to-be-released book explores the capitalism that has flourished within private space exploration efforts, the roots of it, and what's needed for it to reach its full potential. His book, the latest of the 31 that he's authored, is New Space Capitalism, The Entrepreneurial Path to the Stars. His writings also appeared in the Wall Street Journal, Newsweek, Forbes, elsewhere. Rainer Zeitelman, how are you today, sir?
I'm great. Here it's now afternoon. I'm in Berlin, Germany. Now it's 4 p.m. here.
and through the wizardry of electronics, we're in the same place verbally at the same time. So that's always a wonderful thing.
Yes.
And Mr. Zeitelman's website, we have it at our homepage. I won't go through the spelling bee, but you'll find it at Rainer-Zeitelman.com. And again, we have the link over at our homepage. You think about, and you've done so much with your book, sir, with New Space Capitalism, because you help us better understand the history, why a void was created, and what lies ahead, the potential and even the challenges and the risks in what is in the process of becoming from an infancy industry into one that could change a lot of things in a lot of ways. But starting with the history, you look at NASA in the early 60s through the early 70s, they, for all intents and purposes, they had a monopoly, and they lost it. What, was there a specific cause? Was it a collection of things going wrong in lack of response? What was the main catalyst for NASA to lose their way?
Yes, first of all, of course, the moon landing was a huge success in 1969. But on the other hand, it cost $300 billion in today's dollars. 400,000 employees were involved in 20,000 companies. So you can't do something like this for a long time. It was a mobilization like in war times. But in the end, it was a success. But then what followed were 50 years of failure in government-led space travel. I write especially about the space shuttle, and this was a huge disaster. They calculated with development costs of $5 billion, and for every flight, it was like between 5 or 10 million. The reality was that in the end, every flight cost $1.5 billion, and it was an economic disaster. They calculated with 130 flights per year. In the end, it was 130 flights in 30 years. So, and then they had two accidents. You know, 14 people died, and then They had no rocket to bring American astronauts from American soil to the International Space Station. In 2011, the headline of this chapter is the end of the future, because the United States were not able to bring their own astronauts to their own space station, and they had to fly with very old Russian Soyuz rockets, and the Russians, of course, they charged a lot of every flight was 10 or 20 million more than before, because they had the monopoly. So this was a total disaster, and it was very, very expensive. And now let's go then from 2011, 9 years later. 2020, the first time again, the American rocket from American soil, American astronauts came to the International Space Station. But what was the difference? Now it was private. It was this Falcon 9 rocket from Elon Musk's SpaceX company, and a lot of things had changed. Because the space industry became private, this is what I mean with capitalism. And I give you only one number to show what it means, really.
Sure.
The combination of capitalism. Last year, we had worldwide 324 rocket launches. 165 out of them were from SpaceX. So it means if SpaceX were a country, they would be number one, far ahead of China with 88 flights. So you see, and this is a private company. 165 successful flights, success rate 99%. This is, for example, 20 times more flights than Europe did last year. We had only 8. So this is space capitalism today, dominated by private companies. You see it also with satellites from in total 15,000 satellites. 10,000 are Starlink satellites from SpaceX. But my book is not only about the history, but it's what will happen tomorrow and what's the future of space capitalism.
You also explained, too, where economics brought about the downfall, so to speak, of NASA. Smart economics is what's compelling SpaceX and the other private industries. But even in light of that success, the stats that you mentioned for SpaceX, you still have the statists who are insisting, no, we need government oversight on this. We need government to have a say in this. And that made me think back. I'm reading those insights from you about what the space private industry is facing. Maybe think of a story that Jerry Lewis used to tell before he started his regular telethons. He went to then President John F. Kennedy to ask for $10 million for muscular dystrophy research. And Kennedy said, yeah, I can get you $20 million and probably get it to you before you get on the plane, before you go home, but you don't want me to do that. And Jerry said, why? Because if I give you government money, your scientists will never, ever be able to use it in the ways that they see best for the best results, because you'll be imprisoned by favored states, by committee chairs, and it would be totally ineffective and totally prohibitive. Same thing with government money when it comes to space exploration. If it's coming from a source that wants control, the freedom of capitalism is not going to flourish.
Absolutely. Yes, exactly. That's it. For example, if you compare the launch cost means how much does it cost to bring 1 kilo to space. If you compare the space shuttle that I mentioned before with now Elon Musk's cost, he reduced it by 95%. One example, because he made rockets reusable. He used the same rocket now 34 times. And of course, if it comes to cost, it's a huge difference whether you can use a rocket only one time or whether you can use it 34 times. Imagine if you fly now maybe from New York to L.A., and for every flight you have to buy a new aircraft. The ticket price would be, I don't know, $700,000 or something like this.
Yeah.
And this is how NASA works today. Even the last flybys to the moon with this Artemis 2, it cost $4 billion. It was the same. It's not the difference what they did 50 years ago. And so this is the reason is why it is so expensive. You mentioned some points, but there's something else. The cooperation between NASA and the private companies in the past, it was with so-called cost-plus program. What does it mean? The NASA themselves, of course, they were not able to build any rockets. Even in the past, they were built by private companies like Boeing or Rockwell. And then they had to declare, okay, what was your cost? Maybe our cost was $3 billion, and then you can add 8 or 10% profit, and this is your profit. So it means the more costs you have, the higher is your profit. And what happens? The cost became higher and higher. I spoke with one of the leading people who worked at this time in the space industry, and he told me our best product by far was our overhead. Because if you have $1 billion cost and you make $100 million, or if you have $3 billion and you make $300 million, it's an incentive to increase the cost. And this was, of course, a totally crazy way of cooperation. And Musk does it in a very different way. He has fixed prices today. Like, he charges them. He doesn't sell them the NASA any rockets. He built the rockets as he wanted, and he doesn't sell his rockets to NASA, but he sells the service. The same like UPS or FedEx. I deliver something from A to B, or he says, I bring a satellite in orbit, or I bring your astronaut to the International Space Station, and then I charge you this amount of money. And so now Musk has every incentive to reduce costs, because if he reduces his costs, he makes more profit. And you see, so this was a total stupid way of cooperation in the past between NASA and private companies. And the only reason why they started to work together with SpaceX, because in the end, in 2011, what I mentioned, it was a total failure. It was like, you know, like you have it in the football, the Hail Mary move,
right?
To cooperate with SpaceX. They called it, it was our male Hail Mary move, because they were not able to bring their astronauts. And most politicians were against it, were very skeptical. Oh, this private company, that's a bad idea. This will never work. But in the end, you see what happened. In the end, it was much better and much cheaper.
We have to wrap up here with about a minute to go with Rainer Zeitelman and New Space Capitalism here in Issues and Ideas. Capitalists seek to do two things, innovate and make money, as you pointed out. What's one of the most important things that needs to be established for the money-making aspect for capitalists?
This is a very good question. And the most important thing would be private property in space. I have to explain it. You have to have incentives. For example, this vision from Elon Musk. I go to Mars. I settle there. 1 million people. Great. I really love this vision. And I think it's possible to do it, but not without incentives. And of course, not with taxpayers' money. I don't think that American citizens would be prepared to pay trillions and trillions to settle the Mars, for example. You have to find a way how to finance it. And here's my idea. It should be allowed to own private property, for example, on Mars, Moon, on asteroids. Today we have the situation. We have the so-called Outer Space Treaty from 1967. And according to Article 2 of this space treaty, it's prohibited to own ownership over celestial bodies. So it's not allowed for nations to claim ownership of celestial bodies. And this is not a bad idea if nations are not allowed to do it. But how is it with private companies? And this is the problem. There's nothing in the contract, because at this time, 1967, no one could imagine that there are private people like today, Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos, who can do it. They thought only about the government. But I think this is the only way to finance it. For example, let's give you an example. In my book, I asked the question, who should have the right to acquire property in space, like land on the Moon or Mars? And the answer is straightforward. Those who have the financial means to reach, develop, and use it, and to take the risk. For example, if SpaceX succeeds reaching Mars and begins building permanent settlements, as Elon Musk has it now in his IPO prospectus for the IPO, then ownership of land should initially go to the company, not of the entire planet, of course, but of a manageable area, perhaps the size of Singapore, given that Mars has a surface area roughly 200,000 times larger than Singapore. This would amount to just a very small fraction of the planet, enough to build multiple settlements without excluding others. And such a framework would also make financing possible. SpaceX, for example, could place Martian land into a real estate investment trust and then allowing market forces to determine its value. Anyone could be a shareholder, you, I, and everyone. And what is a little bit frustrating, yesterday I read this new prospectus from SpaceX, and it's 400 pages. And to say it in general, the prospectus is very good when it describes SpaceX's unique market position, and it's also good when it comes to risks. But I would have wished for, however, is in more detail regarding the long-term opportunities where the prospectus remains too vague. So how to earn money in space, because money makes the world go round.
That's true.
And without the incentive that you have an opportunity to make money. And, you know, how it is today that the Mars and Moon and asteroids belong to no one and there is no private property. This is space socialism. This is really space socialism, that you have no private property. This is like North Korea, and socialism never worked in the history. In the last 100 years, there were more than 20 experiments with socialism all over the world, and they failed without any exception. And I don't understand, why should something that never worked on Earth, in no country, without exception, why should it work on Mars or on the Moon? It's crazy. Of course, you need private property, private ownership. And I think SpaceX should say more about this, because some people are skeptical. They read the prospectus and they ask now, yes, it sounds good, everything, but to go to Mars, it costs a lot of money, but how to make money? And I think it is possible, not only with this. There are fields like asteroid mining. I have in my book a lot about it. Or space tourism. I have a lot in my book about it. Or then real estate. But about all these things, there are only very few sentences. From 400 pages, maybe it's half page. And so I think it could be much more convincing if... definitely Elon Musk should read my book, and then for his next prospectus, because he should add something.
Well, I think as he comes out further and further, closer we get to the IPO release date, too, he's going to be asked these questions about, okay, fine, we know what the business structure is. What is your looking forward going to be involved with? How are you going to generate revenue, make money? What are your plans? What are you looking at in your priorities? So that, I think the prospectus was just to, because they wanted to do this on a fast timeline, and they wanted to do as much as they could without overloading people. But I think what you're discussing and want to have him focus on, too, that'll come about sooner versus later. And what Rayner is saying about private ownership of space entities, it's not unusual. If you look at American history, what's happened as America moved further west? Homesteading acts, homesteading laws, homesteading opportunities, exact same concept, just greatly expanded with what Rayner writes about in New Space Capitalism, The Entrepreneurial Path to the Stars, a fascinating book of space travel and exploration history, the present, the middle of what created the present, as well as what lies ahead should things go right. And there were points of concern as well of what could be preventative of true, genuine capitalism having its full opportunity in this whole new realm. Find out more about Rayner's work at RaynerZeidelman.com. Rayner, for someone who is a space fanatic as I am, you gave me so much to feed off of. And for those who want to learn, and that's always my hope, that somebody learns when they read, your book is definitely a go-to in what lies ahead. Thanks so much for being here today.
Thanks a lot. I hope everyone can order it now on Amazon, New Space Capitalism. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk about it. Thank you.